Hidden bullet tore through the windshield from inside, right in front of Shogo. Shuya leaned against the truck. He knew where Kazuo was now, pointed the Uzi upward, and fired away. The shadow slipped away into the bushes surrounding the nearby houses. Kazuo had made his way up there. Without a second to lose, Shuya leaped into the passenger seat. Shogo pulled the car out. The truck slid out onto the unpaved entrance road. The machine gun rattled, shredding the hose of the washer on the rack. It thrashed in the air like a snake, fell off the car, and vanished behind them. The gunfire ceased. "Are you all right, Noriko?" Shuya asked. Noriko tilted her face, covered in red, and nodded. "Yes." But her body was still tense. She still held the Browning. Shuya put the Uzi in his right hand between his thighs, pulled out a bandana from his pocket, and wiped her face. Blood came pouring out of the wound, and her pink flesh showed underneath. A simple operation wouldn't be enough to remove the scar from this wound. To do this to a girl. "Damn it." Shuya looked over at Shogo, who was steering. "He already knew where we were a while ago. That's how he guessed our escape route." But Shogo shook his head, saying, "No." As he quickly shifted gears to weave his way along the winding road, he said, "He couldn't have known for sure. He only figured it out at the very end. Otherwise, he would have shown up before Sakamochi's announcement. We would have come out welcoming him, thinking it was Hiroki, and then he would have easily finished us off. He did know where we were, so during the breaks between the bird calls, he planted that wire to buy it his time. He probably planted that wire in other spots, too." Shuya thought that could be true, to buy it his time. But that was what ended up severely injuring Noriko. He said, "Noriko, show me your right hand." Noriko then finally let go of her gun. Its grip was also covered in blood, and gave Shuya her hand. It seemed small and frail, but there was a sharp tear running down between her middle and ring finger. The palm of her hand was covered with a web of blood in the pattern of the textured pistol grip. The wire must have cut her face first and then, as she fell, torn through the hand she put forward as she fell. The wound might have been much more severe if the gun hadn't been in her hand. Shuya wanted to wrap his bandana around Noriko's palm, but realized he couldn't use his left hand. Noriko said, "I'm okay, I'll do it." She took the bandana from Shuya, flapped it, spread it out, and then wrapped it around her right hand. She folded the edges and tied it up. Then she held the Browning again. Beyond the bullet-ridden front windshield, the view suddenly opened up. The truck was descending the mountain. Under the sunset, the flat field widened between the mountainous woods. Shuya realized something urgent and said, "Shogo, we're heading into a forbidden zone." "Don't worry, I know what I'm doing," Shogo answered as he looked ahead. "Did you hear? The forbidden zones are B9 after 7 p.m., E10 after 9 p.m., and F4 after 11 p.m. Add those to the map." Shuya remembered too. He pulled the worn-out map from his pocket, spread it out on his thighs, and marked off the areas while the truck shook. The truck descended and passed by houses. It entered a road equally wide, but paved this time. The southern mountain was visible beyond the row of fields. On the right was a low hill. On the left, approximately 200 meters away, was a residential house that seemed to be in a forbidden zone. Two more were to its left and ahead slightly. And then beyond were scattered houses leading up to the residential area on the island's eastern shore. In front of that region there was the field, now hidden in the shade of the low hill, where they first encountered Kazuo. One more hill over was the school, which was also hidden from view. Shogo slowed the truck down and continued forward, and now the wide longitudinal road crossing the island was right there in front of them. They passed through the fields and came onto the road. Shogo turned the wheel and turned it again. He stopped the truck in the middle of the road, leaving its engine idling. Shogo then lunged at the cracked front windshield with his fist and knocked the entire window out onto the front of the truck. The glass made a shattering sound. "Check the map," Shogo said, his hand back on the steering wheel. Shuya picked up the map again. "According to my memory, we should still be able to take this road all the way east. Am I right?" Shuya checked the map with Noriko. "Yeah, that's right, but F4 ahead is going to be shut off at 11 p.m. "That won't matter," Shogo said, his eyes glaring ahead. The black rain-drenched asphalt stretched out in a straight line. "So this road should be okay right up to the eastern residential area?" Yeah, we're fine up to the front of the curve. Shogo nodded in response. Shuya poked his head out of the window again and looked back. What about Kazuo? Shogo looked at Shuya. He'll be coming. How could he not? Take a close, he said, just as an old, run-down, light olive minivan appeared at the curve of the mountain road they just descended. Shuya immediately realized it was the vehicle parked by the house they had just passed by. Shogo adjusted the rearview mirror and said, See? It quickly closed in on them, and the moment Shuya confirmed Kazuo was sitting in the driver's seat, a burst of shots came exploding out. Shuya tucked his head back in. The bullets hit the truck with a clanging sound. Shogo shifted gears, and the truck moved out onto the wide road, heading east. As Shuya leaned out of the window looking back, Kazuo's minivan also got on the same road. Shuya fired his Uzi. The minivan smoothly moved to the right and dodged the shots. Kazuo's reflexes were aces behind the wheel as well. Aim good, Shuya. By then, Kazuo's minivan had sped up and caught up to them. Shogo, can't you drive faster? Calm down, Shogo said, and steered the wheel slowly from left to right, probably so Kazuo couldn't aim at the tires. Kazuo began shooting again, and Shuya tucked his head in. It seemed Kazuo had also smashed his windshield so he could have better control of his gun. Shuya leaned out again and fired away at Kazuo's torso. Kazuo steered away and dodged the gunfire. He hardly ducked. The row of shells popping out of the ejection port suddenly stopped, and the Uzi trigger mechanism made a locking sound. Shuya realized he was out of bullets. Shogo leaned over Noriko and gave him another magazine. Before Shuya could take it, Kazuo's minivan suddenly accelerated. Shuya pulled out his CZ-75 and fired away. Undeterred, Kazuo came at them. Damn, Shogo said. His profile broke into a slight grin. You're dead wrong if you think you can beat me driving. Shogo suddenly made a sharp turn. He simultaneously pulled on the side brake with his left hand. Shuya was slammed to the side. The truck spun around the entire road like a car in a chase scene. While the truck spun around, Kazuo's minivan came racing at them. The familiar rattling sound burst at them from the driver's seat. The rearview mirror shattered above Noriko's head. Duck, Shogo yelled. But Shuya was busy firing away at Kazuo with his CZ-75. It was a miracle that Kazuo's machine gun bullets missed Shuya. But Shuya's shots also ended up missing Kazuo. As the truck's front bumper skimmed by the minivan's left front side, Shuya got a close-up view of the eternally frigid eyes of Kazuo Kiriyama. The tires screeched against the wet surface. The spinning finally halted. By the time it stopped, the positions of hunter and hunted were reversed. Shogo had managed to dodge the front of Kazuo's minivan, completing a full spin. Kazuo's minivan was in front. Shogo immediately accelerated forward. The engine whirred away with a sudden surge of power, and the pickup lunged forward toward the back of the minivan. Kazuo was turning around. Fire away, Shuya. Everything you got, Shogo yelled. He didn't have to be told. Shuya squeezed the trigger of his reloaded Uzi with all his might and fired away with the gun on full auto. He knew the scorching, empty shells were bursting out at Noriko, but he couldn't be concerned about that. The minivan's rear windshield burst apart. Along with a popping sound, the rear hatch opened up. Then the right tire was blown out with a popping sound. Shuya was out of bullets, but the minivan was now tottering over to the edge of the road. Shogo stepped on the gas. He pulled up to the left side of the minivan, swerved the wheel, and smashed the right side of the truck against the minivan. The blow was hard on them, but it was nothing compared to the damage it did to Kazuo's minivan. At first it lost control, and then it slid to the right side of the road and flew over the edge. The next moment it landed in the lower field and nosedived to the ground. Cabbage leaves flew up into the air. Suddenly, it was still. Shogo stopped the car parallel to the minivan and stepped on the emergency brake. He looked over the roof of the car. Give me the gun, Shuya, Shogo said. Shuya gave him the Uzi. Shogo changed the magazine, extended his arm out of the window, pointed the gun at the minivan, and pulled the trigger. Shogo's hand shook vertically. Even from the front passenger seat, Shuya could tell the minivan was getting pummeled with bullets. Shogo reloaded another magazine and fired away. He inserted another magazine and emptied that one as well. Meanwhile, Noriko was inserting spare bullets into the emptied-out magazine with her wounded hand. After she was done, Shogo took that too and fired away. Noriko loaded more magazines. Slightly bent over, Shuya looked at Noriko's hands, then at Shogo's, and finally at the minivan. They went through this round once, then twice. The Uzi was a 9mm weapon, so they ended up using the bullets from the CZ-75 and Noriko's Browning, too. The Uzi trigger device indicated the magazine was empty with a locking sound. It was out of bullets. Blue smoke drifted up from the short-muzzled Uzi. The narrow cabin was filled with the odor of gun smoke. How many bullets had Shogo fired? The Uzi Shuya had taken from Yuki's group came with 5 extra magazines and plenty of spare bullets. But if they were to include the bullets from the CZ-75 and the Browning, wouldn't the number go up to 250? Or 300? With its left side front passenger seat and roof facing them, the minivan was honeycombed. It looked more like a strange beehive in the shape of a car. The sky was orange now. Shuya couldn't bother to look at it, but judging from the light, he assumed there was a nice sunset in the western sky. "Did you get him?" Shuya asked. Shogo was about to reply when the minivan proceeded to move. It was backing up. It cut across the edge of the field and backed up to the shoulder of the road, once again toward the back of their truck. Shuya was speechless. Not only was the van's engine still functioning, Kazuo was still alive and operating the vehicle. Shogo had wagered everything by emptying their entire bullet supply, and yet Kazuo was still alive. Beyond the bullet-ridden vehicle, Kazuo's upper body sprung up like a jack-in-the-box, with a machine gun. With the rattling sound, the small window above Noriko's head shattered. 2 holes were punctured into the steel board next to it. The truck was a domestic model made of flimsy steel, so Shuya was surprised it had actually remained unscathed this long. This also might have been thanks to the washer and refrigerator line on the rack. Or maybe Shogo had loaded them anticipating this situation. Damn it! Shogo shifted gears and moved the car. Shoot, Shuya, back me up! Shuya fired his CZ-75 at Kazuo's minivan. Kazuo fired back, the bullets landing right next to Shuya's face as sparks flew from the steel frame of the truck. Shuya immediately emptied his gun. He changed the magazine and fired, thinking as he did, "After this, I'm out of bullets. We'll only have Noriko's Browning and her extra magazine. That's it." While he hesitated, Kazuo fired. He heard the rattle, a zinging sound. More sparks this time from the refrigerator on the rack. The small door on the freezer swung open and fell out. "Shogo, I'm out of bullets." Shogo calmly steered. His machine gun will be useless too. He doesn't have time to reload it. Just as Shogo said, single shots came at them now. Blam, pop! The seat by Noriko's shoulder exploded. "Noriko, get down!" Shuya yelled, stuck his arm out of the window, pointed at Kazuo, who now held a gun in one hand, and fired. He was out of bullets. He took the Browning from Noriko's hand. He fired again. To the left of the pickup, between the houses and the field, were the remains of a warehouse burnt to the ground. That must have been what Shogo had been referring to, the building that went up in flames in the late-night explosion. Now they had less than 200 meters before hitting the curve that led to the residential area on the eastern side of the island. "Hey, Shogo, that's..." Shogo replied. "I know," and swerved the wheel to the left. The left side of the truck under Shuya's body floated up. But once it regained its balance, the truck leaped onto the unpaved road. It was another road twisting through the fields, heading back up to the northern mountain. Kazuo followed after them in the minivan. Shuya aimed and fired. Kazuo ducked and fired away. This time the steel board right next to Shogo's head was punctured. "Shuya, just keep on shooting until you're out. Don't let him shoot," Shogo yelled, hunched over the wheel. Shuya noticed that the left shoulder of his school coat was torn and bleeding. He'd been hit by Kazuo. Shuya was about to protest, but he leaned out of the window and fired. Shogo might plan on escaping into the mountain again. If so, then the thing was to make sure Kazuo couldn't shoot, or by some stroke of luck, maybe Shuya would end up hitting him. He fired. And now the Browning was emptied out, the breech block held open. He was out of bullets. They were approaching the mountain, a familiar sight. Strangely enough, there was a farmhouse surrounded by a concrete wall, and a field, a tractor. Shuya realized this is where they first fought against Kazuo, but now they were on the opposite side. "Shogo, I'm out of bullets. Are we escaping into the mountain?" Shuya can make out Shogo's profile breaking into a slight grin. He replied, "Oh, we still got bullets." Shuya knit his brows, puzzled. The truck ran off the entrance road that led to the farmhouse and dashed onto the ridge road. He passed by the side of the tractor. The road ahead became too narrow for the truck. Shogo didn't seem to care and drove the truck straight ahead. Kazuo came after them, maintaining the same distance behind, only 20 meters. He fired from the driver's seat. The truck dove into the farm and stopped. The side of the front passenger seat where Shuya sat now faced Kazuo. Shogo kicked open the door and yelled, "Get out, this way!" He jumped out of the car. Shuya nudged Noriko, crouched down, and followed them. He glanced back. Kazuo's minivan was coming right at them. There was a blast. The left front tire of Kazuo's minivan was blown off. It was only 10 meters in front of them. The minivan tottered, then slid along the ridge of the elevated field on the left. Its front went up in the air like a surfboard taken on a large wave. The next moment, it rolled over on its roof into the field. Right before or after the minivan came to a complete halt, a black shadow leaped out. By the time it somersaulted and came to a kneeling position, Shuya could see it was Kazuo. Sparks flew out from his hands with a continuous popping noise. Then there was another blast. Shuya was still inside the truck as he saw it through the window of the passenger seat. The sight of Kazuo Kiriyama's body being blown back like an arrow. Kazuo landed on the field with a thud. He was completely still. Shuya suddenly recalled the way Kyoichi Motobuchi had died. His sausage factory trash bin stomach. Kazuo was too far away to check the condition of his stomach. Still, given how he was pummeled with shotgun pellets, there was no way he could have been alive. Then Shuya finally emerged from the truck. He saw Shogo holding that shotgun, the one Shuya had tossed into the field when he was running away from Kazuo, as he rose from behind the truck rack. "Oh, we still got bullets." Shogo had picked up the shotgun Shuya tossed away yesterday, loaded the shotgun cartridges he still had. He must have only been able to load 2 shots in that span of time, and fired away, shooting down Kazuo. "Right at the beginning," Shogo said slowly, "he missed us with his surprise attack. So he lost, because then he had to take on all 3 of us." He took a deep breath, put down the shotgun, which thumped against the refrigerator on the truck rack, and took out a pack of Wild Sevens from his pocket. He took one out and lit it. "You're bleeding, Shogo," Noriko said, pointing at his left shoulder. "Yeah." Shogo glanced at his wound and then grinned. "It's nothing." He exhaled. Bang! Shogo's body bent over. The Wild Seven cigarette fell from his mouth, leaving a trace of smoke in the air. The stubbly face contorted. His eyes gazed down at Shuya's feet. Shuya saw Kazuo's raised torso on the lower field, holding a gun in his right hand. He was still alive, but he had been blasted by the shotgun. Shogo's body slowly slumped forward. Kazuo quickly pointed his gun at Shuya. Shuya realized that he was, along with Shogo, no longer behind the truck. He had no gun in his hand. No, he had no bullets. It was too late for him to reload the shotgun on the truck rack. It was way too late. The small muzzle of Kazuo's gun, a good 10 meters away, looked like a giant tunnel. A black hole engulfing everything. Bang! Shuya instantly closed his eyes. He felt a piercing sensation run through his chest and thought, "Oh man, I'm dying." He opened his eyes. He wasn't dead. There was Kazuo in the diagonal orange light of the setting sun, a red dot by his nose. The gun dropped from his hand. He immediately fell back and crashed to the ground. Shuya slowly turned his head to his left. Noriko was standing, holding the Smith & Wesson .38 caliber revolver in both hands. Wow. So that was what happened. While Shogo loaded the shotgun, Noriko had also loaded the revolver Shuya had tossed aside yesterday with her remaining .38 special bullets. Noriko's hands were trembling with the gun. "Huh?" Shogo stood up before Shuya could even help him up. Shuya nervously asked, "Are you all right?" Shogo didn't respond. He picked up the shotgun, and as he loaded it with cartridges in his pocket, he walked toward Kazuo. Exactly 2 meters in front of him, he pointed the gun at Kazuo's head and pulled the trigger. Kazuo's head flinched only once. Shogo turned on his heels and came back. "Are you all right?" Shuya asked him again. "Yeah, I'm fine." Shogo walked over to Noriko, gently grasped her hands still holding the Smith & Wesson, and lowered them. He quietly said, "He's dead. I'm the one who killed him, not you." Then he looked over at Kazuo. "So he was wearing a vest," he said. Shuya then finally understood. Kazuo Kurayama had been wearing a bulletproof vest. "Shogo?" Noriko asked, her voice slightly trembling. "Are you really all right?" Shogo smiled kindly and nodded. "I'm all right. Thanks, Noriko." Then he took out his pack of cigarettes again. It seemed empty, so he looked around, picked up the lit cigarette which had fallen from his mouth, and slowly raised it to his lips. Shuya turned around and stared out at the sun setting over the island. It was over. At least this wonderful game was. And now, including Kazuo Kurayama over there, 39 of their dead classmates were lying sprawled all over the island. Shuya had that dizzy spell again. Maybe his thoughts were numbed by this hollow feeling. What the hell was this all about? Faces flashed by one by one. Yoshitoki Kunenobu's face as he shouted, "I'll kill you." Shinji Mimura grinning slightly as Shuya left. Tatsumichi Oki's as he swung the axe with bloodshot eyes. Hiroki Sugimura, who vanished into the dark outside the medical clinic, saying, "I have to see Kayoko Kotohiki." Hirono Shimizu as she ran away from Shuya after shooting down Kaori Manami. The tearful Yuki Utsumi saying, "I just wouldn't know what to do if you died." Yuko Sakaki, who pried Shuya's fingers loose. Then the cold eyes of Kazuo Kurayama, who'd hounded them until now. They were all gone. Not just everyone's lives, but so many other things were destroyed. But it wasn't over yet. "Shogo," Shuya said. Shogo looked up, shortened cigarette in hand. "We should treat you." Shogo smiled. "I'm all right. It's nothing. Take care of Noriko's wounds." Then he said, "I'm going to collect Kazuo's weapons." He walked over to the overturned minivan. 3 students remaining. Chapter 75. Shogo led the way up the mountain. The weapons he picked out of Kazuo's assortment were tossed into the day pack on his shoulders. He didn't offer them to Noriko or Shuya. It wasn't necessary for the time being. Shuya followed Shogo as he held Noriko up on his left side. They had cleaned Noriko's cheek wound with water for now and covered it with a row of 4 adhesive bandages. Shogo said they were better off not stitching it. Shuya cleaned her hand wound and wrapped it again with the bandana. Shogo had also taken care of his wounds. It was already getting dim in the mountains, but there was no need to make their way through bushes, so it was relatively easy to climb. The ground, strewn with piles of leaf mold, was damp from an entire afternoon of rain. They had covered quite a distance ever since Shogo announced, "We're climbing the mountain," and proceeded forward. "Shogo," Shuya called. Shogo turned around. "Where are we going?" Shogo grinned. "We have just a little way to go. Just follow me." Shuya readjusted his arm on Noriko and followed him. The peak with the viewing platform where Yukiko Katano and Yumiko Kusaka were killed and the southern side of the mountain had become a forbidden zone a long time ago. Shogo stopped right before they entered that area in the upper mid-region of the mountain. "Come to think of it," Shuya thought, "a little ways below I saw Hirono Shimizu shoot Kaori Manami." "This should do it," Shogo said. The slope and woods ended here, and the area offered a good view. They could see the entire island, now immersed in dim blue after sunset, where the fierce battle between the members of third-year Class B Shiroiwa Junior High School had taken place. However, the school holding their final enemy, Sakamochi, was hidden by hills. Shuya took a deep breath. Then he asked, What's up here anyway? How are we going to escape? Shogo smiled without looking at Shuya. Then he said, Relax. Take a look over there. Shuya and Noriko looked over where Shogo was pointing. It was over the southern mountain. Although it was growing dim, they could still make out the ocean, several islands, and beyond, the mainland. Shuya could make out a mist of lights scattered over the mainland. If they were closer, they could have discerned which ones were neon lights and which ones were lights along the shore highway. Now Shuya also knew that this was Okushima Island in the Takamatsushi Bay. There were two other islands, Megajima and Ogejima, and together they formed a vertical row of islands with Okushima at the far northern tip. This meant that the small island beyond the southern mountain was Megajima, and beyond that was Ogejima, and beyond that, the mainland, Kagawa Prefecture of Shikoku. Shogo said, It's not very familiar to me, but that's your home over there. Shua Iwocho must be over there. You won't see it again, so have a good look. Did he mean they'd never return because they were escaping the country? Shuya looked back at Shogo. Don't tell me we came all the way up here for this. Shogo snickered. Hey, what's the rush? Then he said, Show me your gun. There's something I need to check. Noriko handed over her Smith & Wesson to Shogo. He opened up the cylinder and checked it. Shuya thought Noriko had reloaded it after taking that single shot at Kazuo. Shogo didn't return the gun and instead held it in his right hand. He took a deep breath and said, Do you remember how I kept on saying I might be doing this just to have a group, and that my intention might be to kill you off in the end? Shuya raised his brow. Yes, you said that, but... Yeah, but... So, Shogo said, you both lose. Shogo pointed the Smith & Wesson at them. Three students remaining. Chapter 76. Shuya felt a strange expression forming on his face, as if he were grinning and bewildered at the same time. Noriko probably felt the same way. What is this? Shuya said. It's not such a great time to be joking right now. I'm serious, Shogo said, and cocked the hammer. Shuya's grin vanished. He felt Noriko stiffen in the curve of his right arm. You can enjoy the view a little more. I told you'd be the last time. His stubbly face broke into a slight grin. It was a sinister grin he'd never shown before. A crow cawed. Was it flying up above in the darkening evening sky? Shuya finally spoke. His feelings were out of sync with the situation. He could only croak out pathetically, What? What are you talking about? You are so thick, Shogo responded with a shrug. I'm going to kill you both. I'll be the winner. My second in a row. Shuya's lips were trembling. No, this can't be. He stuttered. Come on, stop it. Then you were just acting until now? Yeah, you looked after us. You helped us so many times. Shogo replied calmly. You're the ones who helped me. I probably couldn't have killed Kazuo without your help. Then, so that story about Keiko was a lie too? His words trembled. The more he tried to keep his voice down, the louder it became. Yep, Shogo answered curtly. It was true I participated in the Hyogo Prefecture program last year, and it's true there was a girl named Keiko Onuki, but there was nothing between us. The girl in that photo is my girlfriend, but her name's Kyoko Shimazaki, a totally different person. She's still in Kobe. She's out of her mind. Well, anyway, she insisted I hold on to this photo. I got to say, she was a good lay, though. Shuya took a deep breath. A light, early summer breeze blew against his skin, but for some reason it felt chilly. Then he cautiously asked, But what about that bird call? Shogo had another curt response. I just happened to find that at the general supply store. I figured it'd be useful, and it proved to be in the end. It grew darker and darker. You lost the moment you trusted me, Shogo went on, but Shuya still couldn't believe it. That can't be. That just can't be. Then something occurred to Shuya. This must be... Noriko spoke up before Shuya. Shogo, is this some test to see whether you can really trust us? Is it because Keiko couldn't trust you? Shogo shrugged his shoulders and said, unbelievable how you still believe in that fairy tale. Those were his last words. Shogo held the gun in his hand and slowly pulled the trigger. Two gunshots rang out as evening descended upon the island. One student remaining. Game over. Report from third year Class B Shiroiwa Junior High School Program Headquarters, Tracking System. Chapter 77. Shogo Kawada, male student number 5, reclined against the soft sofa on the ship. He was swaying slightly with the roll of the waves. The room was fairly spacious for a small patrol ship. The ceiling itself was low, but the room must have been a couple square meters. There was a low table in the middle and two sofas on each side, with Shogo sitting on the one away from the door. Because the room was below deck, it had no windows, so he couldn't see anything outside, but it must have been past 8:30 by now. The yellow ceiling lights shone on the glass ashtray. Shogo didn't have any more cigarettes to smoke, though. Once the forbidden zones were all deactivated after the game was over, Shogo obeyed Sakamochi's instructions and made his way to the school. In front of the school were the bodies of Yoshio Akamatsu and Mayumi Tendo, and inside the classroom, the bodies of Yoshitoki Kunenobu and Fumio Fujiyoshi, all left untouched. His silver collar was finally removed, and after the filming of the news segment, he was taken away by soldiers and escorted to the harbor. There were two ships docked there, one for the winner and the other a transport ship to return the soldiers packed inside the school. Most of the soldiers boarded this ship. Only the trio who were in the classroom during Sakamochi's game instructions joined Sakamochi to board Shogo's ship. And tomorrow the subcontracted cleanup crew would take care of the remaining bodies of the students on the island. The speakers and school computers at the school building would also be dismantled in a matter of days. Of course, the software and data for the game had already been removed from the computer. This procedure was identical to that taken immediately after the Kobe Second District Junior High School program came to an end 10 months ago. And now Shogo was waiting here. They were now south of Okushima. The patrol ship was returning directly to Takamatsu Harbor, but the soldiers' transport ship would probably alter its course and head west toward the military base. The doorknob rotated with a click. The soldier who stood guard by the door, the uncharismatic one called Nomura, looked in, then moved away. Kenpatsu Sakamochi appeared. He came in with a tray with two teacups and asked, "Did I keep you waiting, Shogo?" as he entered the room. Nomura closed the door. Sakamochi walked up to him with his short legs. He put the tray on the table and said, "Here, it's tea. Drink all you want." He took out a flat, letter-sized envelope from under his left armpit and sat on the sofa facing Shogo. He tossed the envelope onto his side of the table, then combed back his shoulder-length hair behind his ear. Shogo glanced down at the envelope indifferently and began speaking while staring at Sakamochi. "What do you want?" "I wish you'd leave me alone. I'm tired." "There you go." Sakamochi brought the cup to his mouth with a grimace. "You should be more polite with adults. I had this student, Kato, once. He used to give me a hard time, but now that he's grown up, he's quite respectable. I'm not one of your pigs." Sakamochi opened his eyes as if taken aback, and then smiled again. "Come, come, Shogo. I wanted to have a nice chat with you." Shogo slouched against the sofa and folded his legs. He remained quiet as he rested his cheeks in his hands. "Where should I begin?" Sakamochi put his cup down and rubbed his open hands together. His eyes glimmered. "Did you know we have a betting pool for the program, Shogo?" Shogo squinted his eyes as if looking at filth. Then he said, "I wouldn't be surprised. You guys are tasteless." Sakamochi smiled. "I had my money on Kazuo. 20,000 yen. With my salary, that's a lot. But thanks to you, I lost. Too bad, Shogo said in a tone devoid of sympathy. Sakamochi smiled again. Then he said, I explained how I could tell where everyone was with those collars, right? The answer was obvious. Shogo didn't respond. Sakamochi stared at Shogo. You were with Shuya and Noriko throughout the game, right? Then you betrayed them in the end. That's what it came down to, right? What's wrong with that? Shogo replied. There are no restrictions in this wonderful game. Don't make me laugh. You can't criticize me for that. A broad grin spread over Sakamochi's face. He combed back his hair, took a sip of tea, and rubbed his hands together. He spoke as if he were sharing a secret. Hey, Shogo. I'm not really supposed to be sharing this with anyone, but I'll tell you the truth. These collars have built-in mics, so we could hear everything the students said during the game. I bet you didn't know that. Shogo, who seemed so indifferent in his responses, finally seemed interested. He knit his brows and pursed his lips. How the fuck would I know about that? He said. So then you heard everything, how I tricked them. Yes, that's correct, Sakamochi nodded. But that wasn't very nice, Shogo, was it? Even if we managed to capture Sakamochi, I'm sure as far as the government's concerned, he's expendable? You said that. Being a program instructor is a pretty respectable occupation. Not everyone can do it. Ignoring Sakamochi's complaint, Shogo asked, Why are you telling me this? Oh, I don't know, Sakamochi replied. With your wonderful performance, I couldn't resist telling you. This is bullshit. Shogo looked away, but Sakamochi went on. A wonderful performance, but... Shogo looked back at him. There's something I don't get. What's that? Why didn't you shoot those two right after Kazuo was killed? You could have, right? That's the one thing I just don't get. Just as I told them, Shogo replied without hesitating. I just thought I'd let them have one last look at their home. A little gift for them before their descent into hell. You may not believe this, but I can be pretty loyal. I mean, thanks to them, I won. Sakamochi continued smiling. Hmm, he said and raised his cup to his mouth. He sat back on the sofa with the cup in his hand and spoke again. Hey, Shogo. I got hold of the data on the Kobe Second District Junior High School program. Then he stared back at Shogo. Shogo stared back at him and remained silent. And as far as I can tell from the data, nothing indicates you had any special relationship with Keiko Onuki. Onuki? Like I said, I made that up. Shogo interrupted him, but Sakamochi spoke over him, as Shogo shut up. As you said to Shuya Nanahara and Noriko Nakagawa, you saw Onuki twice. The first time only for a moment, and then the second time right before you won, when she was already dead. Even according to the taped conversations, you never once uttered her name. Not once. Do you remember that? How could I? It's like I said, there was nothing between me and her. You heard me, right? But the thing is, Shogo, the second time you saw her, you stopped there for 2 hours. That was just a coincidence. It was a good spot to hide and rest. That's how I was able to remember that name so vividly. I tell you, she died a horrible death. His grin still glued across his face. Sakamochi nodded. The other thing is, the entire 18 hours which transpired in that game, which is actually quite fast, maybe the designated area was too small. In any case, you didn't exchange a single word with anyone. I mean, aside from saying things like, stop, or I'm not an enemy. That was just an act too, Shogo interrupted him. It's so obvious. Sakamochi smiled, ignoring Shogo's statement. So I have no idea how you approached the game the first time. You moved around a lot, but it was my first time. I did know how to play it smart. Sakamochi nodded. He held back a grin as if concealing his amusement. He sipped his tea and returned the cup to the table. Then he looked up and said, "By the way, about that photo, I'd like to look at it, if you don't mind."
"Photo?
Come on, you showed it to Nanahara and Nakagawa, right? You said it was a photo of Anuki." "Let me see it. It was actually a photo of someone named Shimazaki, right?"
Shogo twisted his mouth. "Why should I show it to you?"
"Come on, just show it to me. I'm your instructor."
"Please?
Come on, please?" Sakamochi said and bowed over the table. Shogo reluctantly reached around and searched his back pocket. He raised his brow and swung his hand back. It was empty.
"It's gone," he said. "I must have dropped it somewhere when we fought Kazuo."
"Dropped it?"
"Uh-huh, it's true. I dropped my wallet. Well, I don't need it anyway."
Suddenly, Sakamochi burst out laughing. As he laughed, he said,
"I get it."
He held his stomach, slapped his thighs, and kept on laughing. Shogo looked perplexed, but then he squinted his eyes. He looked up at the ceiling in the windowless room. Despite the insulation of the patrol ship's walls, he could hear the faint but definite whirring sound. It was definitely not the sound of the ship's engine. The sound became louder and louder, and then after a certain point, it receded. Then it was almost entirely gone. Shogo grimaced.
"Does that trouble you, Shogo?"
He stopped laughing. He still had that creepy smile on his face, though.
"That was a helicopter."
He reached out for his tea again and emptied his cup. He put the empty cup on the table. "It's heading toward the island where you all fought." Shogo knit his brows, but this time the gesture seemed to have a different connotation. But Sakamochi didn't care. He arrogantly leaned back on the sofa and changed the subject.
"Hey, Shogo,
let's talk about those collars again.
Well, you know, they're actually called Guadalcanal number 22.
That doesn't matter. Anyway, weren't you telling Shuya about how they couldn't be dismantled?" Seeing how Shogo didn't respond, Sakamochi continued. "In fact, your theory was right on the mark. Each unit is equipped with three different systems, so even if one of them has a 1% margin of error, with three systems, only one in a million could break down. In reality, the chances are even slimmer. So, it's just like you said. No one can escape from them. Any attempt to remove it will detonate it, killing its wearer. It's very rare someone actually tries that, though."
Shogo still remained silent.
"The thing is," Sakamochi said as he leaned over, "I just thought I'd get in touch with the Defense Forces Weapons Lab this time around. And guess what?" He looked at Shogo. "They said it could be deactivated by anyone with a basic knowledge of electronics, using basic transistor parts, the kind you find in a radio. Of course, that's assuming you already know the circuitry inside the device." Shogo stayed quiet, but as Sakamochi stared at him, he suddenly said in a strange, blank tone of voice, as if the thought suddenly occurred to him, "I don't get it. Who could possibly have that information?" Sakamochi grinned and nodded. "Yes, well, anyway, if we were to assume the collar was disabled, then obviously it would transmit a signal informing us of the wearer's death, right? In other words, if there was a student who could remove that collar, then he could survive without a hitch. He'd just have to wait out the game, and once the military left the premises, he could take his time escaping."
"That's right. Just like you said to Shuya Nanahara.
Say the game were to end in the afternoon. Then the subcontracted cleanup crew comes the following day, so there's plenty of time in between. Also, this time of the year, the water isn't too cold to swim in." Sakamochi gave Shogo an imploring look, but Shogo only responded with a, "Huh?" Sakamochi leaned back on the sofa. "That's crazy. The collar circuits are supposed to be top secret, right? How could a junior high school kid possibly know about it?"
Sakamochi replied, "He could, though."
Shogo looked back at Sakamochi. "See, I have all this information,
including your records and the details about the Guadalcanal device. Under normal circumstances, I wouldn't have looked up any of this stuff. I would have just sat back, impressed by your intelligence. This time, though, I was contacted by dictator headquarters and the Special Defense Forces before the game began. I mean, on the 20th. Shogo stared at Sakamochi. They said someone hacked into the government's central operations system in March. He paused. Then he added, "Of course, the hacker thought he managed to leave without a trace. He was incredibly skilled, and although he encountered the administrator while he was hacking, he managed to erase his login access before escaping." "But," Sakamochi paused again. Shogo kept quiet. "The government system has tight security. It has another secret login system that records every operation. Of course, they usually don't monitor this system, and the administrator didn't think there was anything abnormal at the time. That's why they took so long to discover it. But they found it. Yes, they did." Shogo sealed his lips and stared at Sakamochi, but his Adam's apple moved ever so slightly. The movement was hardly discernible. "Look," Shogo said, "a subcontractor really did tell me about rounding up the corpses. I was having a few drinks at this bar with him. The topic just came up. And the instructor from our last game told us the program hardly ever ends from just time running out. You can even ask him." Sakamochi rubbed his right hand under his nose and stared at Shogo. "Why are you telling me this? I didn't even ask you about that." Shogo's Adam's apple moved again. This time it definitely moved. Sakamochi snickered. "So apparently some of the hacked data included information on the program. Technical specifications on the Guadalcanal collar. Why would someone take such useless information? I mean, what's the point? Even if the hacker were to publicize it, the government would only design a new collar, and that would be the end of that. There's no sign of that for now. But maybe we can assume this much. The intruder was driven to access this information at all costs. Don't you think?" Shogo didn't respond. Sakamochi sighed and picked up the envelope he tossed out. He flipped it over with one hand and pulled out the contents. He placed them side by side in front of Shogo. There were two photos. They were both black and white and printed on B5 paper. One of them had no contrast at all, so it was hard to tell what it was. But the other one clearly showed a truck and three black dots scattered around it. Given how it was the top of a truck, the three dots were obviously heads. "You see, right?" Sakamochi said. "That's the three of you just a while ago, right after you killed Kazuo. Those were taken by satellite. We don't usually do this kind of thing, but I want you to take a closer look at this photo. See? You can't really make out anything, right? But that's actually a photo of the mountain. It was taken when you shot those two. There wasn't enough light, and it's obscured because you're all hidden by the woods. You can't see it." He fell silent. The ship swayed a little, but Shogo and Sakamochi stared at each other, completely still. Then Sakamochi took a deep breath and once again combed back his hair behind his ear. He broke into a smile and said in a strangely intimate voice, "Say, Shogo, I've been keeping track of this game from the very beginning, right? After you shot Shuya Nanahara and Noriko Nakagawa, Nanahara took 54 seconds to die, while Nakagawa ended up taking 1 minute and 30 seconds to die. They should have died instantly if you shot them point blank. So what's this time lag about?" Shogo was silent, but whether he was aware of it or not, his cheeks stiffened. He managed to say, "It can happen. I'd have thought they died immediately, but..." "Enough," Sakamochi cut him off. He said in an adamant voice, "Let's put an end to this." He looked into Shogo's eyes and nodded, as if admonishing him. "Shuya Nanahara and Noriko Nakagawa are still on that island. They're still alive, right? They're hiding on the mountain. You're the one who hacked into the government's central system. or one of your friends. You knew how to dismantle that collar. You knew we could monitor your conversations. So you gave us that radio drama performance of shooting those two. Then you removed their collars. Am I right? I didn't say it was a wonderful performance. You're still in the middle of that wonderful performance.
Shogo gazed at Sakamochi. He grimaced through clenched teeth. Sakamochi kept on smiling. Didn't you give them some messages about meeting spots? And you were supposed to hook up together later, right? Well, you can forget about that. That helicopter that just flew by is going to spray the island with poison gas. It's a composite poison mustard gas developed recently called Greater East Asia Victory, number 2. The guard ships are still over there. Nanahara and Nakagawa are finished. As he stared at Sakamochi, Shogo dug his fingers into the synthetic leather elbow rest. Sakamochi took another deep breath and sank back into the sofa. He combed back his hair. We have no precedent for this. Strictly speaking, you're not really the winner. But one of the education committee officials I work for bet a lot of money on you. So I decided to treat this internally. It'll help my career if I help him out. Therefore, you'll be the official winner. According to the records, you'll be the killer of those two. Are you satisfied now, Shogo? Shogo was utterly stiff, as if he might start shaking any second now. But as Sakamochi raised his brow, Shogo looked away from him and stared down at the floor. I don't know what you're talking about, he said. He nervously opened and clenched his fist several times. He glanced back at Sakamochi and then anxiously said, Why bother spraying gas? You're just wasting tax money. Sakamochi snickered. We'll soon see whether I am. Then he said, Oh, that's right. He pulled out a small automatic pistol from under his coat and pointed it at Shogo. Shogo opened his eyes wide. I've decided to take care of you as an internal matter, too. You have dangerous ideas. I think it's against this country's interests if we let someone like you live. Have to toss the rotten apple out of the box. The sooner the better. You arrive DOA due to injuries from the game. How's that? Oh, don't you worry. If you happen to have friends, too, we'll hunt them down. We won't have to interrogate you. Shogo slowly tore his eyes away from the gun and looked at Sakamochi. You, he said. He was now baring his teeth. Sakamochi broke into a grin. Bastard. Shogo howled in a voice full of indignation and despair, mixed in with a dose of fear toward everything incomprehensible. What he wanted to do most was grab Sakamochi by the neck, but the gun restrained him. He could only clench his fists over his thighs. Don't you have any kids? How can you accept this fucked up game? Of course I have kids, Sakamochi replied casually. You know, I like to have a good time, so we're about to have our third. Shogo didn't respond to the joke, yelling instead. Then how can you accept this? One of your kids might end up in this game in the future. Or is it that kids of high-ranked officials like you are exempted? Offended, Sakamochi shook his head. That's preposterous. How can you say that, Kawada? You read the program requirements, right? There are no exceptions. Of course I've done some sneaky things, using connections to get my kid into a prestigious school. I'm human. But being human also means we have to abide by certain rules. Oh, that's right. You weren't able to steal that, huh? The top secret agenda also had information on the program. I'll tell you now, this country needs the program. The thing is, it's not an experiment at all. Come on, why do you think we have the local news broadcast the image of the winner? Of course, viewers might feel sorry for him or her, thinking the poor student probably didn't even want to play the game but had no choice but to fight the others. In other words, everyone ends up concluding that you can't trust anyone, right? Which would extinguish any hope of uniting and forming a coup d'etat against the government, hmm? And so the Republic of Greater East Asia and its ideals will live on for eternity. Naturally, everyone has to die equally for the sake of this noble goal. I've passed this wisdom on to my kids. My oldest kid is in the second grade now, and she's always saying how she'll sacrifice her life for the Republic. Shogo's cheeks began to tremble. "You're insane," he said. "You're out of your mind. How can you be like that?" He was nearly sobbing. "A government is supposed to serve the needs of the people. We shouldn't be slaves to our own system. If you think this country makes sense, then you're totally insane." Sakamochi let him finish. Then he said, "Hey, Kawada, you're still a kid. It looks like you guys had some talks, but I want you to think a little more. This is a marvelous country. It's the most prosperous country in the world. Well, you might not be able to travel abroad much, but its industrial exports are unsurpassed. The government media are telling the truth when they claim our per capita production is the best in the world. The thing is, though, this prosperity only comes as a result of unifying the population with a powerful government at the center. A certain degree of control is always necessary. Otherwise, we'll decline into a third-rate country like the American Empire. You know, right? That country is in turmoil from all kinds of problems like drugs, violence, and homosexuality. They're living off their past glory, but it'll only be a matter of time before they fall apart." Shogo remained silent. He clenched his teeth. Then he said quietly, "Let me say one thing." Sakamochi raised his brow. "What?" "Go ahead." "You guys might call it prosperity, but..." Shogo's voice sounded tired, but still dignified. "It'll always be phony. That truth won't change even if you kill me now. You're doomed to be phony. Don't forget that." Sakamochi shrugged his shoulders. "Are you done with your speech?" He pointed his gun at him. Shogo tightened his mouth and glared at Sakamochi, ignoring the gun. He seemed ready to face the consequences. "Later, Kawada." Sakamochi nodded as if to bid him farewell. His finger began pulling the trigger when brrrrata! The typewriter rattling of a machine gun pierced through the room. Sakamochi's finger stopped for a moment. He glanced at the door for a split second, long enough to be distracted. By the time he looked back, Shogo was right in front of his face. Even though there was a table in between them, he was only 10 centimeters away. He'd moved instantly, like a magician, as if he teleported. The rattling sound continued outside the room. Shogo's left hand held down the gun in Sakamochi's right hand. Sakamochi froze up and looked up at Shogo's face, now within kissing distance. His long hair wasn't too messy. He didn't try to swing his hand loose from Shogo. He merely looked at Shogo with his mouth closed. The rattling sound again. The door opened. "An attack!" Nomura stopped once he grasped the situation and attempted to lift his rifle. Still holding Sakamochi's right hand down with his left hand, Shogo spun Sakamochi's body around as if dancing a tango. As he turned, he squeezed Sakamochi's index finger on the trigger and began firing away. 3 shots pierced Nomura right above his heart. He groaned and collapsed. The rattling sounded louder now with the door open. Shogo looked into Sakamochi's eyes again. Their bodies still entwined, he drove his right fist under Sakamochi's chin. Sakamochi coughed out blood. His eyes stared up at Shogo. The blood spilled from his lips, dripping down to his chin and onto the floor. "I told you, it was a waste of tax money." Shogo twisted his fist further into Sakamochi's chin. Sakamochi's eyes rolled away from Shogo. Then they slowly rolled upwards. Shogo moved away from Sakamochi, and Sakamochi crashed onto the sofa. His throat was now exposed. A brown stick poked out of his windpipe like a strange ornament. Closer up, the gold logo, HB, on its butt end was visible. This was one of the pencils that everyone, including Shogo and Shuya, had used to write, "We will kill each other." But Kenpatsu Sakamochi probably had no idea. After glancing down at Sakamochi, he tucked the gun into his belt. He dashed over to Nomura, who was lying face up, and picked up his rifle. He took the extra magazines from Nomura's belt and left the room.